They packed up the tent next morning and moved on through a dreary shower of rain. The downpour pursued them to the coast, where they pitched the tent that night, and persisted through the whole week, through sodden landscapes that Harry found bleak and depressing. He could think only of the Deathly Hallows. It was as though a flame had been lit inside him that nothing, not Hermione's flat disbelief, nor Ron's persistent doubts, could extinguish. And yet, the fiercer the longing for the Hallows burned inside him, the less joyful it made him. He blamed Ron and Hermione. Their determined indifference was as bad as the relentless rain for dampening his spirits, but neither could erode his certainty, which remained absolute. Harry's belief in and longing for the Hallows consumed him so much that he felt quite isolated from the other two and their obsession with the Horcruxes.
"Obsession,"
said Hermione, in a low, fierce voice, when Harry was careless enough to use the word one evening, after Hermione had told him off for his lack of interest in locating more Horcruxes.
"We're not the ones with an obsession, Harry. We're the ones trying to do what Dumbledore wanted us to do."
But he was impervious to the veiled criticism. Dumbledore had left the sign of the Hallows for Hermione to decipher, and he had also, Harry remained convinced of it, left the Resurrection Stone hidden in the Golden Snitch. Neither can live while the other survives. Master of Death. Why didn't Ron and Hermione understand? "The last enemy that shall be destroyed is Death," Harry quoted calmly.
"I thought it was you-know-who we were supposed to be fighting," Hermione retorted, and Harry gave up on her.
Even the mystery of the Silver Doe, which the other two insisted on discussing, seemed less important to Harry now, a vaguely interesting sideshow. The only other thing that mattered to him was that his scar had begun to prickle again, although he did all he could to hide this fact from the other two. He sought solitude whenever it happened, but was disappointed by what he saw. The visions he and Voldemort were sharing had changed in quality. They had become blurred, shifting as though they were moving in and out of focus. Harry was just able to make out the indistinct features of an object that looked like a skull, and something like a mountain that was more shadow than substance. Used to images sharp as reality, Harry was disconcerted by the change. He was worried that the connection between himself and Voldemort had been damaged, a connection that he both feared and, whatever he had told Hermione, prized. Somehow, Harry connected these unsatisfying vague images with the destruction of his wand, as if it was the Blackthorn wand's fault that he could no longer see into Voldemort's mind as well as before. As the weeks crept on, Harry could not help but notice, even through his new self-absorption, that Ron seemed to be taking charge. Perhaps because he was determined to make up for having walked out on them, perhaps because Harry's descent into listlessness galvanized his dormant leadership qualities, Ron was the one now encouraging and exhorting the other two into action.
"Three Horcruxes left," he kept saying. "We need a plan of action. Come on! Where haven't we looked? Let's go through it again. The Orphanage?"
Diagon Alley, Hogwarts, the Riddle House, Borgin and Burke's, Albania. Every place that they knew Tom Riddle had ever lived or worked, visited or murdered, Ron and Hermione raked over them again, Harry joining in, only to stop Hermione pestering him. He would have been happy to sit alone in silence, trying to read Voldemort's thoughts, to find out more about the Elder Wand. But Ron insisted on journeying to ever more unlikely places, simply, Harry was aware, to keep them moving.
"You never know," was Ron's constant refrain. "Upper Flagley is a wizarding village. He might have wanted to live there. Let's go and have a poke around."
These frequent forays into wizarding territory brought them within occasional sight of snatchers.
"Some of them are supposed to be as bad as Death Eaters," said Ron. "The lot that got me were a bit pathetic, but Bill reckons some of them are really dangerous. They said on Potterwatch."
"On what?" said Harry.
"Potterwatch. Didn't I tell you that's what it was called? The programme I keep trying to get on the radio. The only one that tells the truth about what's going on. Nearly all the programmes are following you-know-who's line, all except Potterwatch. I really want you to hear it, but it's tricky tuning in."